There were no wounded among Davis Salt's men. Frank Cobb counted 29 dead, all the corpses shot full of holes. Salt was identified by his pockmarked face, but there was no sign of Seth Koenig.
So, he got away clean.
Seems like. But we'll get him, Kate. You have my word on that.
Her own wounded had been carried into the house, and her three dead had been laid out in the parlor, awaiting coffins. Kate was exhausted, her ashen face streaked with gunpowder, spotted with blood. She found it difficult to speak.
I want Seth Koenig brought back here, and I want him to hang.
She was silent for a moment, then turned to Frank.
Do you still correspond with Jacob O'Brien?
Maybe two or three times a year when he's back in the New Mexico territory. Jake's a bounty hunter, as you know, Kate, and he moves around a lot. He's so strange and his letters so interesting, I read them over and over and pretty much memorize every word. Last I heard, he was studying Buddhism, traveling around the country as a bodyguard to a Japanese Zen master by the name of Soyin Shaku.
What is a Zen master?
I have no idea, but that's what Jake called the Japanese man.
Can we hire him to track down Seth Koenig?
No, Kate, we can't. Jacob O'Brien is the best there is, but he's a hard man to pin down. He's one of a restless breed, and attempting to corral him is kind of like trying to dab a loop on the wind.
His face tightened, deep lines etching into his weathered skin.
I'll go after Koenig.
I need you here.
I have some experience as a manhunter.
You're also the segundo of this ranch, and your place is here with the KK.
Winter is cracking down, Kate. I could bring Koenig in before the start of the spring roundup.
No, Frank. We have a ranch to run, and Koenig has already done enough damage. I'll find some other way. I have friends among the Pinkertons, and I'll seek their advice.
You're the boss, Kate, and you have to play it the way you see it.
His face softened.
Why don't you get some rest? Me and the others can do what has to be done.
Kate glanced toward the house.
I'll take a bath and change my clothes. Then I want a report on range conditions, the state of the wells, and how much hay we have stacked. And then I'll bury my dead.
Late afternoon sunlight angled through the windows of Maria Anna's room in the Kerrigan mansion. Outside, the vaqueros shared mezcal with the surviving KK hands, and Gabe Dancer seemed merry enough to sing at the top of his lungs. Don Pedro ignored the din and pulled a chair close to Maria Ana's bathtub.
Can you forgive your Pedro, my love, for all the wrongs I've done you in the past?
The doña laid her neck on the copper rim of the tub and closed her eyes.
Pedro, there is nothing to forgive.
I reduced the number of your servants, forced you to wear the dress of a peasant woman. There is so much to forgive, my love. Wicked, wicked Pedro. Why has the devil entered you so?
Maria Ana opened her beautiful black eyes.
Earlier today, a boy died with his head on my lap. Before he passed away, he looked up at me and said, "I'll be fine, Ma. Don't worry. I'll be just fine." Then I felt his head grow heavy, and a moment later, his soul fled to his creator.
Mi amor, it is good that you brought the boy such comfort. Surely the good Lord will light another star in your honor.
Though wounded, my faithful Yolanda stayed by my side, and Rodolfo Aragon, the gallant and faithful servant I treated with such disdain, laid down his life for me. Amid the inferno of blood and death, I came to realize that French gowns, trips to Paris, are so unimportant. They are the empty desires of a spoiled, selfish woman.
Don Pedro was wise enough to say nothing. Maria Ana shifted a little, and soapy water slopped over the rim of the tub.
I have never been faithful to you, Pedro. Over the years, I have taken many lovers. Until now, I've never regretted them. Now, I regret them terribly. All those empty, meaningless affairs I used to flatter my own vanity.
Yes, this I know. I was aware that they were other men. But I turned a blind eye. Through it all, my love for you never waned. Maria Ana, You were always my moon and stars, my whole life. And that did not change and will never change.
Then who should seek forgiveness? Not you, Pedro. It is I who should ask for pardon. I should fall at your feet and beg you to take me back and never stop loving me.
I will love you always, Maria Ana, until the end of my days.
Then take me home, Pedro. I vow that never again will anything stand between us.
She stood in the tub, water rippling from her magnificent body, then stepped out and, unheeding of her husband's finery, sat on his lap.
I love you, Pedro. Will you take me back as your wife?
And I love you. And you will always be my wife, forever and a day.
The vaqueros buried Davis Salt and his gunmen on the prairie. The Kerrigan hands buried their own dead in the cemetery on the rise above the ranch. The wake is the Irish way to celebrate the life of the deceased and give them a fine send-off, and Kate Kerrigan ordered it was how the dead punchers should be mourned. The stories were told, the old songs were sung, and the whiskey flowed like water. When Maria Ana and Don Pedro prepared to leave the next morning, it seemed that everybody at the Kerrigan Ranch nursed an aching head, and Kate was no exception. She and Maria Ana said their farewells in the parlor, two women who had shared the same dangers and had grown closer as a result.
Have you quite recovered?
The dying boy will stay with me for the rest of my life, Kate.
And all of us. And the memory of the dead boys who gave their lives for this ranch.
We will never forget. Ever.
In the end, Don Pedro came for you.
Yes. Yes, he did.
He saved us.
He's a fine man.
I agree with that assessment.
I don't deserve him. On our wedding day, I should have realized that I didn't deserve him. I think we'd have been happier had I known that and lived my life accordingly.
Well, you can be happy now, both of you.
Yes, I will make Don Pedro happy. But as for me, I just don't know.
You wondered if you were going to be brave, remember? Well, you were brave, very brave. And now you must be braver still. A successful marriage takes courage from both sides. It's not for weaklings.
I understand that now. I had lovers, Kate. The whole time we've been married, I cheated with other men. They were handsome, charming, and shallow, just like I was.
Don Pedro knows this.
He knows. He knew all along. He says he's forgiven me, and I believe he has.
And now you must forgive yourself.
That will be the work of a lifetime, Kate. But I willingly accept it.
Kate glanced out the parlor window, where an impatient Don Pedro and his men were already mounted, except for four wounded vaqueros who rode in a wagon. A peon held the reins of Rodolfo Aragon's horse that Maria Ana had decided to ride back to Mexico.
I think it's time to leave, Maria Ana. Will you come back to see me?
Of course I will. Don Pedro told me he wants us to have a child. The next time I visit, I'll have a fine son or a pretty daughter. Or I'll be out to here.
Either way, you'll always be welcome at the Kerrigan Ranch.
The women hugged.
Vaya con Dios, Kate Kerrigan.
And you too, Maria Ana. Vaya con Dios.
Her hand shading her eyes, Kate watched Maria Ana and the others leave. She watched until they faded behind a dust cloud and felt a great sense of loss. But through it all, she smiled. Texas had a way of turning girls into women. Another departure that day caused great consternation among Kate's maids, but brought grins to the faces of the menfolk. Gabe Dancer had decided to pull out, and he was taking a blushing Biddy Kelly with him.
Kate, there's just too much excitement around the Kerrigan Ranch for a man of my advance in years. Hale, begging your pardon, That there bunkhouse battle gave me the croup, and I ain't recovered from it yet.
Mrs. Kerrigan, ma'am, I'm sorry I couldn't give you more notice, but Gabe asked me to come with him, and I accepted.
We plan to get hitched just as soon as we can find a preacher. Make it all legal-like.
Gabe wants us to have a child.
Boy or girl, I don't care. He or she will be a great comfort to me in my old age.
Even the normally serious Frank Cobb grinned ear to ear.
Go at it, Gabe.
Kate, surprised as she was at Biddy's leaving, acted as though she didn't hear the remark.
You don't need to give me notice, Biddy, but I'm sorry to lose you. Have you thought about this?
I surely did, ma'am. Gabe asked me to leave with him, and I told him that I had to pack a bag. The whole time I was packing, I thought about what I was doing, and I knew it was the right thing. Gabe is such a gentleman, and so handsome.
Kate, keeping her thoughts on that to herself, simply smiled.
Well, I hope you will both be very happy. Biddy, if you ever want to come back, there will always be a place for you at the Kerrigan Ranch. That goes for you too, Mr. Dancer.
Thank you, dear lady. And let me say that I feel honored to have made your acquaintance. You are a fine woman.
Kate accepted the compliment with a nod and turned toward the house. When she returned, she handed Dancer a small canvas poke containing $200 in gold double eagles.
Every Irish bride should have a dowry. And since Biddy's father died a martyr's death and can't be here, this is her dowry from me, standing in his place. Health and life to both of you.
Biddy sobbed, and Gabe, visibly moved, shook his head.
God bless you, Kate. I'm too overcome to say more.
The hands and maids watched as Dancer helped Biddy onto his Mustang and propped her carpet bag on the saddle in front of him. He waved a hand in farewell, and Trace, Frank Cobb, the hands, and the damp-eyed maids cheered as the happy couple left, riding east into the grasslands and their uncertain future. But the excitement of the long day was not yet over for Kate Kerrigan. Just as the afternoon light gave way to a gray dusk, Hiram I. Clay and his riders charged into the ranch at a gallop, whooping and hollering as though they were reliving the Alamo. To Clay's disappointment, it was obvious that the battle was over and the victory already won.
Oh, dear Kate, your harem is wrecked, desolated, in a word, crushed. He was too late to save you.
Clay squeezed Kate's hand and pressed it to his lips that were quite damp from his copious tears. Kate gently rescued her hand.
You're here now, Hiram, and that's what matters. I'm so glad to see you and your gallant band.
I care for you deeply, dear Kate. More deeply than I have the words to express. I am at a loss. Oh, that I was a poet, that I could express my feelings in romantic verse.
And I care deeply for you, Hiram. You have the soul of a poet, and that's quite enough. Obviously, Nora reached you. How is she?
A brave girl, Very. She will be on her feet soon enough, and I will see that she gets an escort back to the bosom of the Kerrigan family.
Kate would have asked more questions about her maid, but Clay was still stuck in warrior mode.
Now I am here. Point out an enemy, dearest lady. Let your Hiram smite him hip and thigh.
The enemy is gone, Hiram. And won't return now that you're here.
Clay clutched Kate's hand once more, pressing it fervently to his chest.
This conflict has taught us a timely lesson, Kate. It tells your Hiram that now is the time to wed you, so that he can protect you forever from, as the Bard of Avon said, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Be mine, my beloved. Do me the honor of becoming my blushing bride.
It was fortunate for Kate that Frank Cobb happened to be passing and read the pained expression on her face.
Mr. Clay, Jasmine Solace just made a batch of bear sign, if you and your boys are interested.
No, sir, I say again, no, sir. Until Kate says I do, I won't eat a crumb, not a morsel. not as much as an iota.
Clay watched Hungry Punchers drift toward the kitchen.
How much bear sign did Jasmine make?
Frank kept a straight face.
Judging by how sharp set those boys look, not enough.
Hiram Clay knew a predicament when he met one. And since the partaking of one of his favorite indulgences was at stake, he wanted a way out of the situation fast. He edged his way toward the house and the wonderful aroma wafting from its kitchen.
Kate, true love makes a man weak at the knees. And I will take your advice and eat a little something to sustain me before I continue to press my suit.
As far as she was aware, Kate had not mentioned food, but she jumped at the chance.
Yes, that's a splendid idea, Hiram. After your long and tiring journey, you need to eat a little something. I always say that to man.
She was speaking to empty space. Hiram Clay was already hustling as fast as his stubby legs could carry him. Seth Koenig rode through Hellfire Pass as the sun dropped lower in the sky. After the disastrous attack on the Kerrigan Ranch, he was in a foul mood and as dangerous as a cornered rattler. His plan was to spend the night in his blankets at the ruin of the old house and then head for Deming at first light. As he rode, his mind raced, busy with schemes centering around the redheaded woman and her cattle empire. Kate Kerrigan and all she owned would soon be his, and despite his seething anger, the realization made him smile. He drew rein and studied the ruins of what had been the Koenig Ranch headquarters. Everything, from the blackened foundations of the house and outbuildings, was as he'd left it. Probably Blade's vengeful spirit, too. That thought didn't trouble Seth in the least. He feared no man, living or dead. He kneaded his horse forward, scanning the empty land around him. His red-rimmed blue eyes missed nothing, the cold stare of a man holding no hint of mercy or kindness. Seth had for too long looked at life over a gun barrel. A man who lived a wild, lawless life, his attitudes framed by the all-consuming hatred he held for the father he'd murdered. Hungry and tired, Seth unsaddled his horse and poked around the ashes and scorched timbers of the cookhouse. A pile of fire-scorched cans and several sides of bacon burned to a blackened crisp littered the floor. He figured they'd be spoiled or even poisonous and let them be. With a bright future in sight, it was not the time to take chances with his health. He spread his blanket roll and lay on his back, smoking a cigar. He watched the sky change from blue to gray, and a chill wind picked up. Over the Tres Hermanas Mountains, thunder rumbled high among the peaks, where bighorn sheep were said to be, though none had been seen for many years. Seth stubbed out his cigar and pulled his blankets up to his chin.
Damn, getting downright cold.
He thought about starting a fire, but decided it was too much trouble. By that time tomorrow, he figured he'd be in Deming, sleeping between sheets under a quilt. He dozed as darkness fell, and night birds called out among the wild oaks behind the ruined house. He sat upright in his blankets.
What the hell was that?
There, he heard it again, a rustling in the brush between the trees. His eyes probed the gloom, a glimpse of white, fleeting. One moment there and then gone. It had been a bird or maybe a steer that had strayed off the range. Or Blade's gibbering ghost. As he got to his feet, Seth grinned. He'd killed the son of a bitch twice. He could kill him a third time. Moving warily, every muscle in his body tense, he stepped toward the oaks, his revolver up and ready. He stopped and peered ahead of him.
Who's there? Show yourself and state your intentions.
The slow drumbeat of thunder was his only answer. Seth walked on again. He reached the stand of wild oak and looked around him, rubbing the residue of sleep from his face. Nothing was there. A big daddy raccoon had probably passed through and rustled the dead leaves.
Seth. Seth.
You son of a bitch, I kill you!
Seth listened, waiting for a reply, but heard only the sound of the lamenting wind and the boom of thunder as it brawled with the clouds. And then...
I've come for you, Seth.
Was it his father's voice? Had he come back from the fires of hell to torment the living? No. Seth refused to accept that. Out there, a man was pretending to be Blade, a mortal man who could be killed like any other. The voice had come from a few yards to his right and maybe 10 paces away. Seth pinned the man in place against the inky backdrop of the night and cut loose. 3 shots hammered fast in the impersonator's direction. He blinked from the gun flare. After some fumbling, he managed to reload his Colt and ready himself for further action. Seth's heart thumped in his chest, and his mouth was dry as though he'd inhaled mummy dust.
Come out, let me see them hands! I got money. Big money. We can share. I can make you rich.
Seth.
The whisper came from his left. No, his right. Damn, it was all around him.
Pa? Is that you, Pa? I'm sorry. It was all a mistake.
Seth. I'm coming for you. Seth.
For the first time that night, fear lanced at Seth's belly, and the hand that held his Colt was slick with sweat. He had to get to his horse, ride away from this haunted place. Yeah, that was it. He'd ride through the storm and wouldn't draw rein until he reached Deming. Seth stepped through the rain-lashed gloom to where he'd left his mount. Above him, the thunderstorm was in full voice, bellowing. Lightning shimmered around him, illuminating the landscape a split second at a time, and starkly revealing the charred skeleton of the ranch house. His horse was gone!
Damn it!
Using the spiking lightning flashes to light his way, he searched for the horse. But it was gone, nowhere to be found. Rain pounded on him and made a waterfall off his hat brim. Something big and black hurtled through the air at him. Seth snapped off a shot and drilled a hole in his saddle.
Soon now, Seth. Very soon.
Seth bit back his panic and charged directly at the spot where he judged his tormentor was hiding, firing as he ran. The area had recently been cleared of brush to make way for the construction of a windmill, and stacks of lumber were still in place. He ran into the open space, but stumbled on something metallic that rolled under his feet, causing him to fall heavily onto his right side. Stunned for a moment, he climbed to his feet and scanned the darkness. A lightning flash revealed no sign of a man, dead or alive, but he did see the round object at his feet. The fire and smoke blackened cooking pot that once hung in Azora Chabert's cabin. Seth angrily kicked the pot away from him and turned, his eyes searching the gloom. Lightning flashed and he saw his salvation. A saddled sorrel pony stood head down in the rain, now and then visible in the flickering glare.
Yeah, I'm leaving, you son of a bitch! Why don't you step out into the open and stop me?
No answer. The ravaged night was suddenly silent as a tomb. Seth threw back his head and howled the victory cry of the Lobo Wolf.
Yeah!
He shoved his boot into the stirrup and then stopped. Footsteps, soft as thistledown falling on grass, came from behind him. Alarmed, he turned his head, his hand dropping to his gun. Too late. Something hard crashed into the back of his skull, and he hit the ground in an unconscious heap. Seth Koenig opened his eyes to a pale blue, washed-out morning sky and the smell of burning wood. Slowly, as his mind began to focus, he recalled the events of the night and the blow to his head. What happened after that was a blank. He lay on his back, and when he tried to get up, he was unable to move. Then, frantically jerking his head back and forth, the awful realization hit him that he'd been stripped naked, spread-eagled, and his wrists and ankles were staked to the ground. Seth's eyes nearly bulged out of his head when he noticed what was thrust into the glowing coals. Red-hot irons, pincers, pliers, rods, dehorners, awls, a wooden-handled knife with a sharp point, all tools that had once hung on the walls of the Koenig stable. He felt a surge of panic mixed with dread, seasoned by terror.
Where are you? Untie me or by God, I'll kill you!
No answer, but footsteps soft as thistledown drew nearer.
You!
Shield, the Pima Scout, kneeled beside Seth. His face was painted black, his hair hung over his shoulders, and his eyes glittered. He picked up a red-hot iron. Seth Koenig was a big man and strong, nourished since childhood on the best grass-fed beef in the world, toughened by years of hard work. And all that was most unfortunate.
Ah! No! No!
It took him 4 days and 3 nights to die. Kate Kerrigan welcomed her daughters Ivy and Shannon back to the ranch, and the girls were disappointed that they'd missed all the excitement. To Kate's considerable chagrin, the fact that their mother could have been killed was news that took second place to the visit of the glamorous and deliciously wicked Doña Maria Ana.
What was she wearing, Ma?
Is she still married to old Don Pedro?
Did she bring a new lover?
Is she still as complaining?
Did she tell you about her romantic adventures in Paris? Huh?
That's youngins for you in these modern times. They love to hear about anything that has a touch of scandal.
Well, they each got a penance of a rosary to be said every night for a month. Touch of scandal, indeed.
She drew rein, her eyes reaching out to the horizon.
The range looks good, Frank. I worry about overgrazing.
There's plenty of grass to sustain the cattle we have. We've enough stacked hay to see us through the winter, and the wells are working fine. The cows are in good shape. I expect a record number of calves come spring.
For a moment, the eyes Kate turned to Frank seemed troubled.
The land was worth it, wasn't it, Frank? All that fighting and dying.
It was worth it and still is. The fight was brought to you by violent, vengeful men, Kate. It wasn't of your choosing. You didn't seek it out.
I won't be run off my range by anyone. But I pray to God we never have to fight for it again.
Amen to that. But there will always be a breed of men who use the power of envy to destroy or take what is not their own. They can never be underestimated, Kate. And if need be, must be fought to the death.
If such a time comes again, I want you here at my side, Frank. I need your strength and courage.
Frank met her gaze.
You don't lack those in yourself, Kate. But I won't leave you. This ranch is my home. It's where I lay my head at night and where I wake up in the morning.
You've come a long way, Frank. We've both come a long way. Me from the slums of New York, and you...
from the Owl Hoot Trail, though I never did see a bright future in the outlaw profession.
Your future is here, Frank. Right here.
I know. But it's good to hear you say it.
Kate reached over and touched the back of Frank's gloved hand with the tips of her fingers.
And I've got an exciting surprise for you.
Well, that sounds interesting.
What's your favorite food in the whole world?
Geez, I'd have to think about that. Maybe...
You don't have to tell me. I already know. It's my sponge cake. And I'm baking one for tonight's dessert, just for you.
Frank forced himself to look pleased. Visions of Tom Ogilvie's promised dried apple, raisin, and cinnamon pie popping like soap bubbles in his head. Despite hobbling around on a splinted leg, Ogilvie swore that the pie would be something special, a masterpiece. Poof, it was gone, replaced by sponge cake.
This will be the first time I'll use Queen Victoria's secret ingredient. I know how well you love my sponge cake, Frank, but the big secret is to add rose water to the mix. I promise it will be even better. Aren't you excited?
Very.
The polite southern gentleman was lying through his teeth.
I just knew you would be. And I'm giving you an extra large portion, since you love it so much.
Now I have something to look forward to. I can hardly wait.
Night lay over the Kerrigan Ranch like a purple fog. Here and there glowed orbs of orange light from oil lamps as a hazy moon had begun its climb into the sky. There was no sound, only the hallowed silence of the plains and the drowsy hush of sleeping people. A barn cat crossed in front of the mansion on whispering feet, then stopped as its amber eyes searched the darkness before it melted into the shadows. The midnight hour chimed. Did you ever hear the screech of a bobcat? If you have, then you've heard the closest sound there is to the ancient Pima war cry, accompanied by the hammer of a running horse. The primitive shriek shattered the quiet and brought the Kerrigan punchers tumbling out of the newly repaired bunkhouse. The Pima had already disappeared into the night, but he'd left behind a memento, a heavy object in a burlap sack. Frank Cobb and Trace Kerrigan, both in hat, boots, and combinations, were the first to reach the door.
What the hell is it?
The door creaked open. Kate, in her nightdress, stood on the step. Behind her, maids in various stages of undress crowded together, their eyes wide with fear.
What happened, Frank?
What's happening? What is that?
Did you hear that loud noise?
Frank bent down and picked up the sack, testing its weight.
Somebody, an Indian, the sound of his whoop, left this. Oh, it's heavy.
Do we want to see what's in it?
The Indian, whoever he was, wants us to. I reckon he made that pretty obvious.
He took the sack from Frank, untied it, and dumped its contents onto the wooden floor. The grimacing head of Seth Koenig rolled to Kate's feet.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, and all the saints in heaven preserve us. It has no eyes.
Frank exhaled sharply, studying the severed head.
No nose either, but I recognize him. It's Seth Koenig, or part of him.
Frank, are you sure? It could be anybody.
Frank's eyes remained locked on the head.
When I shoot at a man and he shoots at me, I tend to remember his face. It's Koenig, all right.
Silence hung heavy.
Yes, now I look closer. I see that it's him. The hair. Yes, I remember.
Frank shifted his gaze to her pale face.
Well, I reckon it's over now, Kate. Somebody evened the score for us.
Who? Wait, I remember. There was an Indian with the Koenigs. He saved the Tillett baby's life. Ate the child by my side.
Frank shook his head, uncertain.
I guess we may never know if he was the one that did for Seth. Blade, maybe? He's capable of something like this, but I doubt he'd do it to his own son. Look at the burn marks on the cheeks and forehead, and right there on his lips. Seth Koenig was tortured before he died. Maybe for a long time.
Well, whoever it was did us a favor. Now we've no need to go after him.
From the shadows, old Moses Rice appeared, surprising them all.
Yes, it's Seth Koenig. And the Indian who was here did this to him. One time I saw a man after an Apache woman worked on him for a few days, and his face looked like that.
He turned to Frank, his voice heavy with certainty.
It was the Indian, Mr. Cobb, not the boy's father. If Blade Koenig couldn't stop this, then he too was dead.
That last was greeted by silence.
Mose, what you say is true. They're both dead, father and son. And the Indian who saved the baby was the one who killed Seth Koenig. I know it.
You have the gift, Miss Kerrigan.
Yes, I do. We both have, Mose.
Nora Andrews stood before Kate Kerrigan, her posture straight, her face composed despite the faint scar on her forehead. Apart from the mark, she looked well and ready to resume her duties. Kate studied the girl for a long moment, pride glimmering in her eyes. Then, with careful hands, she pinned Queen Victoria's medal to the bib of Nora's pinafore.
Wear it for a week. You've earned it.
Nora looked down at the medal, her fingers brushing the cool metal. Her throat tightened with emotion.
Thank you, ma'am.
Nora, you are the real heroine of this household.
Kerrigan's Five, The Devil to Pay, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2018, J.A. Johnstone. published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Colleen Delaney. With Lillian Rachel as Kate Kerrigan, Rainer Gabriel as Seth Koenig. Also with Bob Payne as Frank Cobb, Kayleigh Rivera as Doña Maria Ana, Christopher Williams as Gabe Dancer, Tyler Herchuk as Blade Koenig, and Damon Allums as Davis Salt. Also with Wynn Delano, Alicia Beltran, Terrence Aselford, Matthew Aldwin McGee, Mike Carnes, Bradley Foster Smith, Katie Booth, Chris Davenport, Rob Moreira, Eva Wilhelm, Nea DuRusso, Adrian Garcia, Jonathan Sleep, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Drew Copas, Debbie Tinsley, Cody Roberts, Daniel Yaka, Bru Adjuashi, Steve Wanall, Peter Stanley, Kenneth Charles, David Quiqui, Jessica Threet, Elizabeth Jernigan, Arden Wanall, and Tia Shearer. Adapted for graphic audio by Crystal Judkins. Directed by Crystal Judkins. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Casey Green. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you want more passionate, full-cast audio westerns, keep listening for a sample of Gunny Rose 5, All the Dead Shall Weep. Available now in graphic audio. Eli was working, so I met the train at Sweetwater by myself. I'd just returned from guarding a shipment of farm implements on a leg of its journey between Canada and Mexico. I'd had to travel to take the job, but it had been 10 days of work and lucrative, and it had gotten me out of the house. All of which meant I could afford to rent the old car from the Segundo Mexia stables and drive to Sweetwater to meet the train. The station at Sweetwater was little more than a shack clinging to a platform, but at least there were a couple of benches under a roof. I was grateful for the shade. It was June, and June in Texoma is hot and dry, unless it rains. Then it's hot and steamy. Today was a dry day. The station master, a sprightly 60-ish woman named Molly Lerma, came out of the shack to sit with me. I expect she was glad of the company. She spat into an old can positioned at her feet.
You're Jackson and Candle's daughter, ain't you?
Candle's daughter and Jackson's stepdaughter, Lisbeth Rose. Lisbeth Rose Savarova now.
You the one married that wizard?
Eli Savarov.
And he wanted to live in Texoma?
He did.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.